Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and hey, Jersey City people, Union City people, Hoboken, North Bergen people, get on the PATH train and come see me tomorrow. Tomorrow morning we'll be doing the show live from WNYC's Jerome L. Green Performance Space, and one of our segments will be the Hudson County edition of our anecdotal census series. We want to know how you think your neighborhood has changed in the last 10 years. And you can post it on our webpage, as other people from Hudson County and all over our area have been doing. We have a page for every county in our listening area, and Hudson County is up this week, but we're also doing some of it live in the green space. So if you're available tomorrow morning, if you want to come to a comfortable place, watch a radio show being done, have some nice air conditioning. We'll talk about a lot of other things too, and have some other guests, Katrina VandenHeuvel from The Nation and Jonathan Alter from Newsweek talking about President Obama. The CEO of Etsy and other people talking about starting a business, come on over from Hudson County or from wherever. We'd love to have you for our live show at the Green Space tomorrow. Tickets on the events page at WNYC.org. Now, today is the six-month anniversary of the earthquake in Haiti. A roundup of aid agency reports from Reuters, AlertNet, that website says an estimated million-plus Haitians are still living in tent cities, and little reconstruction work is underway. On the positive side, fears of widespread disease epidemics spread by the living conditions have reportedly not come true. Former President Bill Clinton and Jean-Max Bellerive, co-chairs of the Interim Haiti Reconstruction Commission, write in the New York Times today that just 10% of the money promised to Haiti by other governments has actually been dispersed. That would be, I guess, about $500 million as compared with more than $5 billion that has been pledged. By the way, one reminder for any Haitians listening in our area right now who are not in this country legally, next week is the deadline for applying for temporary protected status. The government is offering temporary legal immigration status, good for at least 18 months, if you were already here before the quake, and if you apply by next Tuesday, the 20th of July. Less than half of those eligible have applied so far. For example, the Star-Ledger says that in New Jersey, which has the nation's fourth largest Haitian population, only 2,200 people had applied around the middle of last month, even though more than 15,000 are eligible, mostly in Essex and Union counties. Quoting Jefferson Parks Ministries in Elizabeth, the state's largest social service agency for Haitians. So they're very slow, much slower than they expected to be in receiving applicants for this temporary protected immigration status. So make your own decisions, but remember the deadline is just 1 week from tomorrow, the 20th, for you undocumented Haitians. Gary Pierre-Pierre is with us, editor and publisher of the Haitian Times, publishing for the Haitian American community. He's here in New York. Hi, Gary. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Can I start with TPS, this temporary protected status? Is it also your impression that Haitians here illegally are not taking advantage of this offer by the government as quickly as people predicted?
Well, it's not my impression. It's also a reality. People are not. Part of the reason is that there's a sort of uncertainty about what happens next. Okay, in the minds of a lot of Haitians in this country illegally, they have temporary status, but 2 years, 3 years down the line, what's next? So they would rather stay under the radar instead of applying for this status that would allow them to get a work permit of some sort and stay in the country illegally at least for a while.
And are you taking an editorial stance on this in the Haitian Times? Are you saying, we understand your concerns, we understand your fears, approach this thing with caution? Or are you saying, look, history seems to indicate that once anybody gets temporary protected status, they get to stay in this country, because that's pretty much the experience of people from Central America and elsewhere where this has been applied. Why don't you go for it? Your lives will probably be better. Are you taking either of those stances?
Well, what we've been doing lately is really providing people with some information about the reality, both sides actually, of what you've mentioned. There is no precedent of any group giving TPS and then having been sent back massively. I don't think any administration in this country would round up so-called illegal Haitians and send them back to Haiti, considering the reality that the country faces. And so I think it's a pretty good bet, but sometimes it's very difficult to convince somebody who's in a precarious legal situation that I, as a Haitian American with an American passport, to tell them that it's okay to file this temporary status application when anything can happen to them because of it. So what we've been doing is finding a way to educate and inform people, and hopefully that they will make this decision and fill out these forms. We work with community groups, and we provided space for free in some instances in the paper for them to make their argument and advertise their services for free.
And Haitian listeners, you can call us up about TPS, temporary protected status, if you want, or call us up with the reports that you're getting if you haven't been there yourself from Haiti, or if you have been there recently. How are things, according to you, 6 months after the earthquake? 212-433-WNYC. You can call us right now. We want to hear from Haitians in our listening area. 212-433-9692 with anything you want to say on the six-month anniversary of the quake. For Gary Pierre Pierre, editor and publisher of the Haitian Times and host of Independent Sources on CUNY TV. What's the big picture, Gary, as far as you're concerned, 6 months after the quake? How are things going in Haiti?
Well, that's a very loaded question. I mean, it depends on whom you ask. Things are not good. Things were never good to begin with. But I think there's been some progress. The government of Haiti and aid organizations have done a good job, as you mentioned earlier on the top of the show, averting a major crisis and disaster that we all thought would inevitably happen. I think the...
That's the health crisis in particular, right? Epidemics taking hold in the tent cities and things like that.
Exactly. And I think the rescue and relief response has been modeled. It was massive, it was quick, and it was efficient, and it was well done. I think now the question should be, what about the recovery and reconstruction? And that's where it gets really dicey. Money that would pledge from the international community, some 60 countries have pledged some $10 billion of dollars. I don't think most of that will be disbursed to Haiti, no matter what hoops the Haitian government is put through to get that money. I don't think a lot of these countries have the money to give to Haiti to do what it needs to be done. I think the challenge for the Haitian government, for the Haitian people, is really to find a way to realize that they're in this, for the most part, by themselves, and to come up with a very sound plan where they can lure not only the money that's needed, but also the manpower, the brand that is needed in the country to manage such a large projects. I don't think right now Haiti has that in place, and it needs to start there. And I also think the international business community needs to be engaged in a very meaningful way. I think the Haitian government needs to convince the private sectors across the world that it is good to do business, and they are willing to do business. Once I see these things taking place, then I feel much more optimistic about the future of Haiti.
Now, you talk about the government having to convince the rest of the world that they're ready to receive this money. The op-ed by Bill Clinton that I mentioned today and by Jean-Max Bellerive in the New York Times also says Haiti's government has done everything it's been asked to do by international donors to inspire confidence, maintain transparency, and ensure that not one single cent is lost to corruption. And then it goes on again to plea. We cannot turn our backs on Haiti's government and its people when the time comes to write the check. So is that, do you think that's an exaggeration of how well the Haitian government is doing, or do you think that the anti-corruption measures and the transparency are really effectively in place And that should be a boon to being able to get the aid from governments and other organizations around the country.
Well, the problem with that sentence, with that passage, is that the Haitian government is not in charge of the money being dispersed to Haiti. It's the international aid organizations that are running. President Préval has made the statement over and over that do not ask the Haitian government about a penny because it doesn't manage. He doesn't know where any of this money is being spent, which is the actual fact. So in some ways, the Haitian government has no control over that money. And so to say that it has done everything possible to show transparency, I'm not sure that's quite true.
Fabienne in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Brian. Hi, Brian. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment because I was in Haiti a couple of weeks ago. It was my first time going since the earthquake. And I visited a few of the camps and was just appalled by the conditions in the camps. And in particular, was there with a colleague at the NYU Law School, Meg Satterthwaite, who's a human rights lawyer. And we were talking about the victimization of women in camps. There are women and girls getting raped in camps now. And there's a belief among the women growing that this that these rapes are organized by the government. There are generations. I spoke to a young man who's a law student who had interviewed, been doing interviews with women who had been victimized. And there are now three generations of women who have been victimized from, you know, coup to earthquake, grandmother, mother, and then, you know, a five-year-old daughter. And it just boils my blood that adults can't get themselves together to disburse the funds that are necessary, to move in a way that's efficient and necessary to stop this. Because to me, like, if we can't protect girls, then what are we worth? And what is it that we're doing? What's so important that we can't figure out how to set up some program to make transparency possible? You know, it's like we have brilliant minds, right? Why is this so hard? Knowing how much people are suffering, why is it so hard to just say, look, here's the money. If $25 are going to this person, $40 are going to this person, you know, whatever ministry, or $3 billion, and here's exactly how it's going to be spent.
So, Fabienne, are you drawing a connection between the rape problem and the fact that governments haven't turned over the money that they've promised?
I'm drawing a connection between the slow disbursement of this money and the fact that people aren't being moved from the camps. And because they're in the camps, they're more vulnerable to rapes and to other kinds of victimization.
Thank you very much for your call. I don't know if that problem is getting as much attention as it may deserve, if it's as Fabienne reports it. Are you familiar with this issue?
Yes, of course. It has gotten a lot of play on Haiti and some among Haitian American press. But one thing I need to challenge Fabienne's point, who I know very well and is credible, but I don't think that the Haitian government has been orchestrated this situation.
No, yeah.
And
no.
So I would, you know, that's the only quibble I would have in everything
that
Professor just said.
No, I wanted to point out that this is what the women are saying, and so this is even more dangerous. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, if this is what now they're believing, then it adds another layer of problematics to what the government is gonna try to do eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, I feel like in order to protect the government's credibility, we need to empower them to move forward, and we're not empowering them to move forward.
Thank you.
You know what I mean?
Thank you very much. Yeah. So Gary, on this issue of the governments of the world that have promised a total of, $5 billion plus to Haiti, and only having handed over about 10% of it, according to President Clinton, what's up with that? I mean, these are governments, you know, these are countries, these are nation states promising money to a fellow nation state that's undergoing this unbelievable emergency. And even after they promise the money, they're not handing it over?
Brian, this is not the first time Haiti has been promised money. And in fact, President Clinton, when he took this job as a special UN envoy to Haiti, one of the things he said that, you know, it's about time that people start really honoring their pledges to Haiti. Haiti has been used and abused by more than just the governments of Haiti. Governments around the world have used Haiti for their own purposes. There were a lot of feel-good chest thumping at the UN back in March when this summit took place, and everybody was pledging as if they were on some kind of telethon show. But when it was time to write these checks, I'm not surprised, because at the time I was very skeptical about whether a lot of these countries would indeed disburse this money.
Who are the biggest deadbeats?
Unfortunately, I don't know that. I don't have that information in front of me. But I would imagine it's equally spread across all countries.
I do understand that Congress in this country is having trouble getting authorization for much of the money that was promised by President Obama.
And that's probably the same thing happening in these other countries, because there's a political reality that each country faces. You have oppositions. You have perhaps administrations who have good intentions, but you have opposition leaders who feel that this is a waste of their taxpayers' money, and that they have their own problems, and it should, Haiti's problems are not a priority for that particular country. And that goes back to a point that I raised earlier. I mean, I think while Haitian Haitians should seek help, but you know, a lot of the first steps, a lot of the first solutions has to come from within, and we have some, you know, resources that we have to put on the table. One of the problems that the international community has with the Haitian government is that it really, the country lacks a lot of the skills necessary to absorb a lot of the money. In fact, the Red Cross is and other NGOs are withholding monies because they're not sure what projects, you know, they should put their money in, whether or not these projects would be successful or not. And that's the same thing for, you know, our private investors. The country is really not opening itself to private investors. There's an idea doing business in Haiti is that all for me, nothing for you. Well, that mindset has to change. That business transactions should be ideally a win-win situation.
Gary Pierre Pierre, editor and publisher of the Haitian Times, here on this six-month anniversary of the earthquake. Hopefully, we won't be having this conversation.
Probably the same, Brian.
No. Marlene in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi. I'm a nurse, and I just came back on Friday from volunteering a week in Port-au-Prince with an American university hospital, and what I saw was really eye-opening. It was a small complex, essentially a group of buildings with a pediatric area, spinal cord injury area, an ICU, a walk-in triage area, manned by both Haitian nurses and doctors and volunteers and American volunteers, doctors, nurses, and ancillary support.
And are they meeting the public health needs as far as you could tell?
Well, I really couldn't tell. I mean, it was probably a patient population of, I'm going to guess, around 50. So that's a tiny fraction of what I imagine the needs to be. But and people are turned away from the triage area. One of the things that was brought to light from this experience is the need for aftercare. Once a person is released, you know, where do they go? They go to a tent, and they might deteriorate and probably will deteriorate, especially if they're immobile. And apparently, as far as I know, there's no long-term care facilities for people with spinal cord injuries who either are paraplegic or quadriplegic.
Even this long after the quake?
Well, I don't know if there was anything before, but you know, people in that kind of condition need, you know, they can't be in a tent lying on their back. And in fact, one young man was brought in, and his bed sores were so massive that he essentially did not have a buttock. Mm. And
since you just returned last week, what would you say is the biggest thing that is needed there that anybody else could provide from a public health perspective,
since you're a nurse? Again, my experience is very limited to that one area that I was in. Mm-hmm. I would say structures that are manned or staffed by Haitians that are going to be there on a long-term basis.
Marlene, thank you very much for your call. Gary, two quick things before you go. One, do you think the BP oil spill has hampered Haiti relief at all just by stealing news coverage that might have remained more on Haiti without this as kind of a second major disaster of this year, though very different, of course? Or would the extra media attention have been mostly irrelevant?
Well, I don't think the BP had much impact on coverage of Haiti. I think at some point, even before the BP oil spill, there were scant report out of Haiti from major newspapers and television stations and radio stations. I mean, as you know, as we know in this business, you know, after a while, no matter how serious an issue, we tend to move on to something else. I think it would have been, you know, LeBron James or something else would have happened that Haiti would have played second fiddle.
And right after the quake, a bright side was considered to be the opportunity for the new focus to result in Haiti being redone in some ways, the physical infrastructure being built right this time, and a more serious international push to reverse the conditions that have made Haiti chronically the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Bill Clinton, among others, were articulating that opportunity. Has anything been done to seize that longer-term opportunity?
Not yet. I think what has happened is that a lot of the Haiti planners have basically been dusting up old plans and trying to somehow get them funded and put into place. But I think a lot of the discussions in the radio stations in Port-au-Prince have been very insightful. A lot of people would like very much to see that. Unfortunately, I don't think the government officials are there yet. I think they are still dealing with the short-term needs of the country, and no one is really looking at the mid- and long-term needs of the country that will bring about a new and better Haiti, if you will.
Though it sounds like you think that that opportunity may still be there once the immediate crisis has gotten beyond.
Well, certainly, I think it does. There's a lack, again, of foresight from the people who are running Haiti right now. I think they need to open the country up for business, to business. And I think no country is ever developed to aid. No community, even let's take New York City, our beloved city, did not change from the 1980s to what it is today by enrolling the welfare rolls. You need a good, sound government policy coupled with sound private investment to move anywhere, and Haiti is no different.
Gary Pierre-Pierre, editor and publisher of the Haitian Times, publishing for the Haitian American community. He's based here in New York, and he's also the host of the TV show Independent Sources on CUNY TV. Gary, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, is there any good way to pick a judge? Political appointments have their problems. Electing a judge is really considered to be ridiculous in many ways. So we will ask, is there any good way to pick a judge? Stay with us.